Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is the Red, White, and Rude podcast, where I break down politics within culture. Because as we all know, politics is downstream of culture. And what does that mean? That means that eventually what is happening culturally will affect politics. And do we have a hell of a show tonight? First, we're going to break down the astronomer CEO's kiss cam catastrophe. Byron smooch with HR chief spark scandal, leave and resignation. As a sailor, I have a few words on that. Then there's a shock that came to us all. It was a happy shock for most conservatives. CBS axes Colbert's late show amid late night television collapse, and the liberal media whines. Now, everybody on the right is talking Epstein conspiracy. Well, the liberals are creating their own conspiracy with this cancellation, ignoring the fact that it's a capitalistic system and Colbert was bleeding that company dry. Then we're going to break down or talk a bit about the NPR PBS being defunded. The funding cuts in a recession bill spark conservative cheers and again, liberal outrage because they just can't understand what you're talking about, Willis. That's an unbiased show. Then we're going to close it out with a few rude rundowns where I give my thoughts concisely on Superman's budget and break even point. It's what you call a soft hit right now. And that's about the best you can say about it, despite all the hoopla that you're hearing from Warner Brothers and James Gunn. And then we're going to talk about, yes, another Resident Evil movie. And then we're going to talk about, yeah, baby, a potentially new Judge Dredd movie that has a director and scriptwriter assigned. Then we're going to talk about some sad news. I just saw this, and that's the death of Dragon Ball Z's creator, Akira Toriyama. And you know, give my thanks. And I, you know, 25 years ago, I was in my 20s, you know, 30 years ago, and I did watch a few episodes. That was when I was coming to the end of my anime era. And I still watch anime slightly here or there when I'm bored. And I'll catch a couple series. Anime is seen by like 80% of Americans or the world. It's usually popular. And that's because Japan does a lot of adult themes with their anime. The problem with anime that kind of creeps me out is they do a lot of boob fetish and girl fetish stuff too. And the girls tend to be very young. So that's always had me scratching my head. And before y'all come out with a racist, you know, my half-brother's Japanese. You know, from Nagasaki, and yes, he lost his family in the dreaded bomb. So I take offense to people who, when you just look at the reality of what something is, they want to play politics when instead of having an actual conversation. Then I'm going to close it out with an update. A couple weeks ago, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, I did a show on the Duck Dynasty, the revival, how it started out very weak, how they weren't giving any updates to the show's ratings, and you can see why. It's been what you could call nearly a complete collapse. And so we're going to talk about that to close the show out. But before we begin, do not forget to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com. Grumblingsmedia.com and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, eSpotify under the handle Grumblings Media. If you're watching this as you watch it, please give it a thumbs up. And after the podcast, make sure you like and share it. Well, I guess giving it a thumbs up is pretty much the same thing. Make sure you share it. Okay, so let's get into our first story. Astronomer CEO. You know, so his name is Andy Byron. As we all know, the astronomer CEO, boy, that did not work out very well. And he was caught on the kissing cam. Caught on the kissing cam. It was a catastrophe. Because of the fallout that ensued, how they acted towards it, it was just terrible. Terrible, I say. Okay, so astronomer CEO Andy Byron and his HR chief Kristen Cabba were seen kissing on the Coldplay's Kiss Cam. And what happened was, you know how it's at games, sporting events, and now at concerts, you know, concerts, it's not a relatively new thing, but you always think the sporting events, the camera goes around, catches a couple, and they go, give themselves a little peck. Well, these two were like, she was standing in front of him. You know how you do with your girl. You get your arms wrapped around it. Now, his arms were wrapped around, like, up here. It was a boob action with the hands. And when they realized the cam was on them, it was Panic City. They were novices at this. As an ex-sailor, I can tell you, talking to buds who've been married. I wasn't married when I was in the military. Talking to buds who were married, they they cheat. Now, you know some of the guys with the experience, they know how to play it cool. These two, oh, man, they scrambled. They were embarrassed. It was a dead giveaway. And they were caught. You know, this happened July 17th, just last week, and the video surfaced. And there was a follow-up video that came out. I saw it. It's kind of shady because you don't really know if it's them, but it revealed the pair smooching before the kiss cam moment. And that's intensifying the allegations of an inappropriate relationship between the CEO and HR head. Now, both of them have been placed on leave pending a board investigation. And Byron did resign July 19th, highlighting HR violations in a progressive tech firm, i.e. leftist hack firm. So how did this happen? Well, let's backtrack here. Let me first tell you a little bit about the company. Astronomer Inc. is a Cincinnati-based data analytics startup that's seen as a unicorn because it's valued at over $1 billion. And all these companies valued over $1 billion, yet, for example, in my industry of fantasy sports, DFS, Daily Fantasy Sports, FanDuel, and DraftKings were valued at over, I know FanDuel for sure, at over $1 billion. I don't know if they've yet made a profit, you know? So so take that with a grain of salt. But they specialize in open source data orchestration platforms like Apache Airflow, and they serve clients in tech and finance. Now, the company emphasized its commitment to high standards in the statement, noting, our leaders must set the standard. That is technically true wherever you go, but that's just code speak. Every company says that. So the CEO who got caught, his name is Andy Byron. He joined the firm in 2022 after some time spent at Cyber Reason, as well as other firms previous to that. And they don't even call that human resource. The chief people officer, human resources, is Kristen Cabot. And she's responsible for the company culture and employee relations. Now, if she's, as my Jewish friends would say, if she's stupid, the boss, that's not good representation of an HR director, especially if the boss is married. Now, the dirt on Byron is he was not well liked. A former employee described him as toxic. And he created a culture of fear. And no one was allowed to counter him. You know, I have my opinions. But my guys will tell you, yeah, William just says bring him the proof, the data, and he'll roll faster than Jerry Clooney against Larry Holmes in their championship boxing match. And for those of you who are older, will get what I'm talking about. But the point is he was not well liked, ruled through fear. My point that I was saying about me is I'm like, show me the data because I do rule harshly, like it's my way the highway. But I will allow you to prove me wrong, and I'll go with what you want. Or when my guys would tell me, when I did a small startup, my guys would tell me that, hey, well, we have issues with this. I go, all right, just play it out till the project's over. In this case, it was till the season's over. And then they get all pissed off because when the season's over, I'd have remember, okay, I need you guys to redo these templates here. And we templated a lot, not, you know, to make writing more smooth. People like the repetitiveness and how they read their work, et cetera, et cetera. Then they bitch a fit because they didn't want to do it. Complain, but didn't want to fix it. So I forced them to fix it. But that's being a good boss, giving them what they ask for, giving them what they want. This guy did not seem to be like that. There's a 2018 report on him at Cyber Reason that highlighted mismanagement and turmoil, including high turnover and an aggressive leadership style, confirming reports of dissatisfaction. This guy was a bully. Arrogant. You know, when you become a CEO at that level, there are traits that show CEOs have these traits. And so the board now has a formal investigation, and he has resigned. It will likely lead to, lady, you broke every rule, you're fired, you need to resign. So her lawyers may be figuring out a way contacting the company that's do a buyout, and the company may do, okay, if I'm the company's legal team, I go, no, you just fire her ass. You know, period, end of story. Now, she may come back with, she felt like she had to have done it. Then if I'm HR or legal of that company, I'm doing a full-fledged background investigation, talking to to find every bit of dirt, because she just wants her cake and eat it too, meaning she was in a position. I have met women like this. I remember working at Bojangles, and there was a girl like that. She wanted to hang and sleep with the boss, who was one of the fuggliest guys you'll have ever seen, because he was the boss. Yeah. And the boss was so cool. We felt bad for him. We're like, she's using you, bro. But there are women like that. It was this, that type of woman. I don't know. I don't care. But if she knew he was married and her as the HR director is doing this, she's a vile sow. So this company is going to face potential lawsuits, obviously, for HR violations or breach of fiduciary duty. He's resigned. You know, obviously the astronomer name is going to become a running joke as their reputation is destroyed and hammered by this. And experts predict policy reviews, diversity training, and possible investor pressure. Who cares about that stuff? That's all formalities. All they're doing is making life hard for the people there. Got to go to another damn diversity training. What the bleep? You know, the reputation is progressive company. These other companies aren't going to care. They just want to get business done, and they can get business done with this company. So that's over the top nonsense. That's coach speak with the articles being written. So they say it could affect funding. No, it won't. Or partnerships in that area. No, it won't. You know, no, it won't. So the media and social media reaction, well, obviously outlets, New York Post, Axios, CNBC, Vanity Fair, they all ran with this, and they made it viral, along with social media blowing it up. Without the media, social media, or had they acted normal, like they've been like this, and they just stood there like that, doing nothing, you know, with their hands crossed, it would have come and gone. Maybe somebody at the company would have said, dude, was that you? Go push. Keep it on that one, bro. What's that promotion you want? You got it. But they acted like the fools, and they were caught. So some of the talking points is, let's see here. So, corporate ethics versus personal indiscretion. Look, you just don't do this. You just don't do this, and you don't act the fool. Like I said, I knew some guys in the military. They were professional philanderers. And I'd be like, oh, my God, dude, aren't you? Where's your wife? Ah, she's with a kid tonight. You ain't going to say anything, are you? I didn't know their wife from another woman on the street there, you know. But, yeah, you know, I've seen some fights and blow-ups erupting. According to word on the street, the wife is like, he's going to pay a price for this. He's going to pay a price for this. I guess her Facebook, she kept it open in terms of people can go on there and comment on it. So she's probably going to make out, because he's like a billionaire, they say, or maybe the company. He's worth a lot of money. So you just don't do it. Corporate ethics, she's gone, because that you cannot have corporate. Let me put it this way. Something negative happens, it doesn't matter, and she's still on board, they're going to point to her legally. Look, they kept her. Why am I being fired? Which is some legitimacy to that. So how the company deals with it internally is simple. You got to fire them. That's all the talking point you need. But what's funny is all these people on their soapboxes, you know, virtue signaling. How dare he? How dare she? You know, good and well, 50% of those people behind their computer. Man, my girlfriend's waiting. What's that, baby? Oh, nothing, Miss Wifey. So there you have it with that. So, I mean, the Kiss Cam fiasco astronomer, what it does, it exposes the hypocrisy in the woke tech culture, where leaders like Byron preach standards, where the HR woman preaches standards, but fails spectacularly. And it happens in the conservative circles. But the woke people, they just seem so righteous. You know, I guess so do conservatives when they're preaching their God, you know, God this, God that, and they're doing this. So it's human nature is what I will say. So what liberals do overlook and conservatives know is that personal accountability matters more than virtue signaling. We do try to live by our standards. They just talk standards. And I do mean that. I have met both sides, and for the most part, it's the conservative side that tends to be more virtuous, but we're all guilty of plenty of things as well. So I guess I shouldn't say that, but it just seems in this new world, politically speaking, that is the case, meaning do as I say, not as I do. And I guess I don't mean it from this example, but more of do as I say, not as I do in other ways. You know, I mean, you got to give to the poor. You got to help with the poor. They don't. They'll cut a check. Or we got to take care of the climate as they get in their private jet. So that's more along the lines of what I'm referring to, that this exemplifies. But so just don't forget how scandals remind us that true leadership does require integrity. And what I mean by that is they're looking at you for leadership. So you better carry yourself and walk that tightrope and keep your shit on the down low, people. All right, let's move on. So CBS axes Colbert's late show amid late night TV collapse. So what's happening here? So just a couple days ago, it came out that the late show with Stephen Colbert will be canceled in May of 2026. They're going to just retire the show after his contract expires after 33 years. That sounds like a long time, but it's not. It's about a generation. And the reason I say that is because the show was created for David Letterman after he didn't get the gig at to replace Johnny Carson. You know, they gave him his own show, the late night show, CBS did, and or the late show. And he started it, and after he retired, they replaced him with Colbert, I believe. And I did double check it, but I'm pretty sure. Was it Colbert? Huh. Let me check that real quick. I'll check that. I don't have a producer right now, so but I'm pretty sure. But the point is, the show did not have a long run. You know, let's see. Did Colbert replace Letterman? Let's see. That's a quick answer. Yes, so he did replace Letterman in 2015. So, wow. Wow, 2015. So, wow, he wasn't on there long, 10 years. 10 years out of 33, so Letterman was on there forever. Because, you know, the show was built around Letterman and his shtick. And Colbert came in and just made it purely political from day one. I mean, the man was on Obama harder than a lady of the evening on a sailor come payday by the docks, you know. So they're just going to retire it. Why? Because they see no future in it. They're not going to go conservative. That's the only future they see in it. But they're not going to do that. That's just not their nature. They are not a conservative business. They are an extremely progressive business, you know. And they also canceled CBS's After Midnight with no plans for a replacement host for that either. So this was purely a financial decision. Why? We live in a free market, a capitalistic system. They are a private company. Well, the public traded, but they had to make money. Colbert's salary was way over the top. The ratings drop was killing the CBS brand financially and politically at this point, but the Paramount brand as well. So the money saved will go into new shows and or other ways to grow the CBS name or the Paramount name. So what should CBS do with the time slots? We'll talk about that. You know, is late night television dead? We'll talk about that as well. Oops. Okay, so some of the key points here. Obviously, this show, The Late Show, was a staple since 1993 under David Letterman, and it evolved under – I had it in my notes. I just had to scroll down. And it evolved under Colbert into a very extremely partisan platform. The guests were heavily liberal, 99% left-leaning as of early 2025 studies. Colbert's anti-Trump monologues, it alienated his audience. And that contributed to viewer fatigue as well. Even his audience got tired of it. Not that they were tired of the jokes. It's just same old, you know. They're still anti-Trump, anti-conservative, anti-American values. But they just had enough of their Colbert shtick, even though they agreed with him. He wasn't bringing them back every night. So, obviously, reaction exploded on social media. Conservatives celebrated that we popped the champagne. And it wasn't misguided political commentary. It was just flat out lies and hateful and vile commentary. Colbert is one of those types who wish conservatives dead. When people get to that point, the day they leave this planet and begin their next journey, this Mother Earth is a much better place. These are just vile, evil people who wish us dead simply because we don't agree with them. You know, as conservatives, we're obviously saying go woke, go broke. On the flip side, liberals claim that CBS bowed to political pressure. Not true. They're ignoring CBS financial motives, which is to make money. And the fact that 56% demo drop, he lost 56% of the share of the demo. That's over 50% of his ratings within the 18 to 55 or type graphic, or demographic, the demographic that advertisers crave. Now, the Writers Guild of America is calling for investigations into CBS, and they allege political interference, though there's no evidence that points to that. They're urging officials in New York and California to investigate potential bribery. They're claiming CBS canceled it to suppress free speech, and to curry favor with Donald Trump or his administration. And they said this is being done because of Paramount's proposed merger with Skydance. However, even show staffers went press. They state that, hey, everyone knew there was a financial strain. And again, it's private business. It's standard to jettison products and services that are losing money, as The Late Show is. That's how capitalism works. So this is nothing but ideological hate, and it's hate so entrenched, my friends, that they distort simple truths into conspiracy theories just to mask their lack of ability or their own inability to understand. They believe it's political because he chastised his bosses for settling the 60 Minutes election interference claims with Trump. And with most, without TDS, no, that's not true. You know, there's editing, the tighten up times, and there's completely replacing a question's answer with a different one to create a perception of a presidential candidate that looked political. Was that an easy slam dunk win? No, but it was better than odds. They could win. So the last lawsuit that went to court was a CNN lawsuit, and they settled. They were found guilty of $5 million, and then the next phase of the trial settlement of punitive damages, which could have taken CNN to over $100 million. So they chose to settle out. It had to do with a former sailor named Young, who was working to bring Afghani families, and they said he was a bounty hunter, going to the highest bidder. Well, he was working for corporations to help get their families out, and he did charge a pricey price, but it wasn't as CNN was saying. And the reason CNN settled out is they were right to settle. The jurors were saying, yeah, we were looking at, as a jury, we were looking at over $100 million in punitive damages. George Stephanopoulos got caught red-handed, stating a blatant lie in legal terms, in terms of calling Trump a rapist, saying the courts have said that. No, the courts had never said that, had never deemed that. And they settled out. CBS saw this writing on the wall. Wow. We can't talk about how this is normal editing because it's not. They completely replaced one answer with another. Wasn't even the same interview. Now, it was the same question, different interview. That's not editing. That's just fabricating. I'm trying to think, Mark Halperin said, well, that's normal. I said, no, Mark, that's not normal. They replaced the answer, you moron. Halperin is brilliant in many ways because he has contacts. This is a guy who got fired by ABC for sexually harassing women. And he came out and he apologized about it, so I assume he admitted it. You know, I'm like, if you can't tell the difference between flirtation and sexual harassment, then I can understand why you can't tell the difference between editing and fixing and creating election interference so we see a presidential candidate in a way that makes her, in this case Kamala Harris, look presidential. So Colbert was chastising CBS for settling. They did not have a strong case. This could have gone either way at best, slam dunk for Trump at worst. So they settled out. Plus, they do want to get approved, and being tied up legally could cause issues. So what's some of the broader context with all this? It's not just Late Night with Stephen Colbert. ABC's Jimmy Kimmel is looking at 2026 retirement because he knows they're not going to renew that contract. His ratings have plummeted too. NBC's Seth Meyers predicts is likely to go. He had to fire his band just to keep his budget, bring his budget down. Nobody's watching these shows. Comedy Central's The Daily Show struggling. Their host is the old host has come back, but he's not the viral. He's not the water cooler talk at work at 9 a.m. in the morning like he used to be decades ago, because nobody cares anymore. They can find their funnies on live streaming, on podcasting. You know, so right now I'm shooting this podcast. When I shoot Fired Up on Friday nights, or when I'm working late or shooting other podcasts, after I'm done, I say, babe, I'm done. 99.9% of the time, and I'm being serious, she's watching YouTube and podcasts, not Rumble. Rumble just crap. They don't have a good streaming service in terms of putting it on television. And the only streamers they actually push and promote are the ones that they pay money to. So we don't watch Rumble. That's on Rumble. And I'm a conservative. I'd love to support Rumble, but they're crap. And they're playing us. They wanting us to support all their paid podcasters, but they don't do squat for the content creators. It's some of the worst systems. It's one of the worst live streaming companies. That's why when people talk about Dan Bongino and all the stuff he's going with Epstein, I'm like, get out of here. The guy's just flailing right now because he doesn't want to lose those 5.5 million subscribers he has on Rumble, and he owns part of Rumble, and he doesn't want to risk that. You know, he's not my cup of tea. I like him, actually, but the way they have propped him up as if he is God to MAGA, go bleep yourself. He's not. He's far from it. You know, if he was so honorable, he shouldn't, and believes there's more to it than what we're seeing, he should have never gone on Fox and say, no, he didn't kill himself, if he doesn't believe that. You know, so, you know, screw you, people. You know, you don't follow the person. You follow the values, the beliefs, you know. Blind ass people. Anyway, I'm digressing. So, again, so this is just the first domino of many that are going to come. You know, actually, it's the second domino. It started with the CBS Late Late Show. Now it's his show. Jimmy Fallon was pulled back to 4 nights a week. He has destroyed the Tonight Show brand. Destroyed it. You know, so late night's gone. It's dead. I mean, it's here, but it's dead. It's dead show walking. And the reason I say that, look, CBS said this is purely a financial decision. And it's due to a challenging backdrop in late night television. It's unrelated to performance content or Paramount's external issues. And I believe all of that to an extent. Why? Because it is related to performance. It is related to content. They're spewing nothing but leftist propaganda. That's what they're doing. In fact, I think it was Gwyneth Paltrow, maybe somebody else. They were talking about the CIA, how they were working with actors in some event or something. Colbert just immediately changed. Well, no, what about this? Because he didn't want to dwell on that, how they're working together. And Tulsi Gabbard just came out with stuff on how the Obama administration, including Obama, colluded together with the intel agencies to destroy Trump's presidency. So the fix is in. And that's how Colbert spews. Lie after lie after lie after lie. And then he wants us conservatives dead. The day he leaves this earth is the day Mother Earth will be a better place. Because when you have hate like that, you're not helping to bring us together. So he will go away after this. I mean, look, Jon Stewart tried this show on Apple. It died. You know, others have gone elsewhere. They died. Without big media backing you and putting you as the face of something that once had a great reputation, The Late Show with David Letterman, Tonight Show with Jay Leno and Johnny Carson. When you put new faces that are leftists, or will eventually lean leftists as Jimmy Fallon did, you're going to eventually fail. And once you leave, you're not going to have an audience. Look at all the CNN people, the MSNBC people, the NBC people. All these people that were there, we recognize them because of the product they worked on. Nobody's going to their YouTube channels, their Substacks. It's just not happening. And that's what's going to happen with Colbert. So the overall trend here, 2020, peak levels, approximately 3.5 million total viewers and 500,000 in the 18 to 49 demographic. By mid-2025, he lost 31%. Think about that. So he's probably getting about 1.5 million people now. And in the 18 to 49 demo, he had 500,000. He's probably at about 240,000 now. 200,000, right around there. Those are death knell demos. If you get 100,000 or less in that, you're done. You're canceled immediately. So he was 100,000 above it, but not at the cost of that show. And I'll get into that in a moment. But he was dropping 10 to 25% in some periods over the past year. And now he trails his rival Greg Gutfeld. Network television is free. Everybody gets network television. You have to pay to get Fox News. Now, people may say, well, I'll get on my cable, because it's probably in a certain tier that's given to you. You have to call up and say, I don't want this tier or this tier. I want this base tier. But the base tier is so trivial, nobody gets it, so you get the next tier up. So odds are you get Fox News whether you like it or not. But technically, yeah, cable is in tens of millions of less households. And he's beating Colbert. That speaks volumes. That's literally like David and Goliath. This has worsened the financial strain on CBS and Paramount. It's bleeding money. And so they're like, William, it's a leading broadcast late night. Well, you know, here at Grumbling's Media, we're a small company. And my show, Fuka, Fired Up California, shockingly doing well. But just because I'm the leading, or my show, or our basketball show, which is our leading show, is the top show here at Grumbling's Media, when compared to the rest of the world, you're like, well, you don't have anything to brag about, William. And we're working hard to improve those numbers, and we are improving it. That's why we're happy at Grumbling's Media with the trends, with the strides we're making. But the point being is, maybe it's not the best analogy, but it's not doing well when you take a step back and look at the bigger picture. Because its ratings are plunging. The first run ratings, meaning the news shows. Which tells you that late night television is dead. So per puck, that's a website or an outlet that's run by leftists. This is why they're canceling it, and why the rate. So they may be number one, but the show costs $100 million per year to produce. And despite being the top rated late night show, it's losing more than $40 million a year. CBS is struggling to monetize. They're not struggling. They can't monetize it. Now, when I did my research, I was like, okay, how does it do virally? It has viral moments. But those viral moments were of hate. So the viewers that were watching it didn't go, hey, I like this, and go, I'm going to watch the show. That wasn't happening. So despite viral clips, the overall ratings kept declining. It doesn't matter if you go viral if you're not growing or monetizing that, and they weren't able to. They were still losing $40 million a year. So the odds are that those moments lack positive audience conversion. They lack positive audience conversion. And they may have alienate broader viewers. Now, Colbert's annual salary was about $15 million, one of the highest paid hosts in late night television. So it's hurting the CBS brand, the overall Paramount brand. So money saved, you're going to save $100 million a year. That's going to go into new shows, into maybe more into the Paramount streaming service, innovator program, or other ways that they're going to use it to grow the CBS name in what is becoming an extremely competitive market. So let's compare it real quick to Gutfeld. That was launched in 2021. Gutfeld, again, is a conservative-leaning late show on Fox News. It often surpassed Colbert in total viewers, despite airing on cable. So in essence, cable has fewer households. Just remember, fewer households. Yeah. And his conservative-leaning humor appeals to underserved audiences. I find it funny because you know why? He doesn't just crack on leftists. He cracks on rhinos. He cracks on everybody who doesn't really promote the conservative value. But he'll crack on himself. his host. I mean, he just makes it a fun environment. I apologize. I apologize. My producer's finally chiming in. So, Gutfeld flipped the script. He overtook Colbert in totals at plus 4% and Demo at plus 26%. So his audience in 2024 was 4% higher than Colbert at probably 20% the cost, maybe. And at the Demo, the audience that they do want for advertisers, 26% higher. That's a massive number. By the first quarter in 2025, Gutfeld's lead widened to 46% in totals. That's everything. He peaked with 5 million viewers during his Trump episode in 2024. Year over year, Gutfeld saw a 35% growth in totals, 33% growth in Demo in 2024, while Colbert declined 7 to 20% in similar periods. So Gutfeld's moving up, Colbert's moving down. Two ships passing the night. The Titanic here and whatever ship here. The U.S. says we're making money here. So Gutfeld's gain, about 64% in record episodes, combined with Colbert's drop, reflects an audience migration from partisan broadcast satire to edgier cable alternatives. So Colbert's downfall underscores the irony of a show built on mocking conservatives couldn't survive while a conservative-leaning comedy late-night show did survive. So what CBS does overlook, and conservatives have long known, is the long arc of where biased media leads. When you alienate audiences, when you fracture trust, that's going to create financial ruin and ultimately justify these shows getting canceled. And it's justifying or proving that a media landscape that prioritizes truth over tribalism will win out. Why Gutfeld's doing better. Colbert's fall signals a demand for media accountability. We just want truth in our news, people. We don't want a biased echo chamber. You give us an opinion show, that's fine. But if you're giving us news, then we want it to be unbiased. But the problem is Colbert's was not an opinion show. It was a late night comedy show that's supposed to talk to all Americans. Again, so what should CBS do with the time slot? I think that's pretty easy. When I was a kid, there was a show called Kolchak, The Night Stalker. Cheesy, only ran for a season. It was a show that dealt with a reporter, Kolchak, going out investigating the supernatural. The opening episode was Jack the Ripper. It had vampires, zombies, reptilians. I loved it, and it inspired the creator of the X-Files. You know, he got the idea for the X-Files because of that. So, because there was a time nobody could touch the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, so they added programming there. People forget Saturday night should be television. The Love Show, the Love Boat in the 70s was a big hit on Saturday night. You know, obviously viewers have changed, times have changed. But AMC a few years back on Saturday night did a show, Hell on Wheels, and they started showing new episodes of Saturday night. They were shocked. Well, we got numbers here better than during the week. So the opportunity to experiment with new shows, maybe a show that you want to build the audience, you know, hey, we love the show. It's not streaming as well. Let's put it on late night here. See if we can grow it. See if we can get some viral videos. So a lot of experimentation. But that's what I believe they should do. So is late night television dead? Yes, it's dead if it continues on the leftist forefront, if it continues going with hate towards conservatives. You know, it's dead. If they come in and start cracking on both sides, if I would keep late night show, I'd find a young comedian who was not partial to one side, no politics. Well, I like politics. Then for every leftist joke you do a conservative joke. For every conservative joke, you do a leftist joke. For every skit, you do this. You make it the fair practice policy that they used to have before Reagan ended it, where if you showed one side, you had to show the other. I mean, you have to do that to build trust. You know, SNL ratings have sucked for decades now, and they're happy with what they can get now. It's become an institution. But when's the last time a great comedian came out of SNL? Well, Adam Sandler, I mean, I think Will Ferrell is probably the last big one. And the fact that I can't remember, there may have been others that come out, but nothing big. And that was, what, 20 years ago? I can't remember the last time I watched SNL. We used to catch it. That was the last era we watched with Will Ferrell, Sherry O'Terry, those people. And even then, we didn't really care for it too much. It was just we liked some of it. You know, so that's how I would do it if I stuck with comedy. So is it dead at this point? Yes. Can it be revived at this point? Yes. Is conservative comedy the answer? No. Fox News has their built-in audience. You know, CBS did not have a built-in audience of leftists. The Late Show with Stephen Colbert was supposed to be the late night show to make you laugh. Fox is the conservative network. So no, it's not the answer. All right, let's move on. NPR PBS defunded. All right, so there's some good news here. The House approved Trump's $9 billion cut to public broadcasting and foreign aid. And that was, I'm trying to think of what it's called. The Department of Government Efficiency Rescission Act of 2025. That's what it was called. The government Department of Government Efficiency Rescission Act of 2025. Part of what was in there was the defunding of NPR and PBS. And they leveraged DOGE to push a $9.4 billion rescission bill, which, in essence, they were clawing funds back from public media and foreign aid, U.S. aid. It's pretty much dead. And so, in essence, it was a government bill to stop funding certain programs, including a lot of the programs that DOGE identified, as well as NPR and PBS. And how Trump did it was he used the 1974 Impounding Control Act, which is a rare move, and he used it to cut previously approved spending. So what that act does, it limits a president's ability to withhold funds appropriated by Congress, meaning the president can't stop the money. He can do a deferral, which is a temporary delay with intent to spend, or a rescission, which is a permanent cancellation with congressional approval. So this control act says you either spend the money or we whack it. They chose to whack it. And it's rare for Congress to do that. So in essence, in layman terms, the 74 Impoundment Control Act is like a rule book that says the president can't just sit on money Congress has already approved for spending unless he follows specific steps to defund it. And that's what he did. That's what he did. So it passed 51 to 48, and the House followed 216 to 213. Trump will sign that. And it fulfills a decades-long GOP goal. See, here's the problem with Republicans. They campaign, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. They do nothing. Trump's come in, now let's get it done. This, under any other president, was likely not to be passed. Why do I say that? Every president has literally promises. It's kind of like moving the U.S. Embassy from, I forget where it was at, to Jerusalem. Bush, the last Republican president before Trump, said he would do it, and every other Republican president said they would. Some Democrats, too. None of them did. Trump said, yeah, I said, we're going to move it. Because they're worried about how would the Muslim nations, those who practice Islam, take it. Screw them. We made a promise, we hold our promise. The Jewish people are our allies. I don't care if you're an anti-Semite and you justify it. Israel is our only ally. They are the only democratically elected government in the Middle East. Well, is Iran, Iraq? Maybe they are now. But you get my point. So the cuts targeted NPR, PBS, and global programs. And let's see. So the NPR, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, called the CPB, which is the parent company, loses all federal funding, which is about $535 million every year. That's just that main one. They get money in different forms as well. Now, the liberal state, it threatens rural stations. I'm in a rural area. They claim emergency services, PBS and NPR, provide critical emergency broadcast services in rural areas. So let me give you an example. Where I live, on one of the reservations, there's a Native American station. And I was told that they get funding from the government. Nobody listens to them. You can count probably less than 100 people listening to that, a couple of hundred. And the only reason I discovered them is we were doing debate once, and they were willing to air. It was big news. Hey, they're going to air our debate. Oh, really? Well, who the hell is going to be listening there? You know, the chickens and the cows. So that's, I'm not saying it's a, they're all like that, but most of them are. You know, I still, you know, they're streaming. There's, we get satellite. We get wireless. We get other forms. A 50 watt station is not servicing us anymore. Now, somebody talked about it online. Well, you know, these people are going to lose jobs. Well, they can get jobs elsewhere. This is the same tropes that they were talking about when television came. And then the radio people were saying that. When CDs became readily available and cheaper to produce and have more data. Vinyl companies were saying, well, we're going to go, this hurts us. We're going to lose jobs. Now, the CD companies are saying the same thing because we download our music. It's just part of the involvement of how we do business in America. You know, Trump celebrated on True Social, calling NPR PBS propaganda worse than CNN, and they are. Conservatives hailed it as a great public service. Well, one conservative said, well, conservatives hail it as the greatest public service announcement in our lifetime. Quote, William Del Pilar. So NPR CEO Catherine Marr and PBS CEO Paula Kurgan warned of devastating impacts. They're lying. Dissenters like Collins and Murkowski. Murkowski was, I think, given stuff, so she'd vote for it. And then Democrats like Chuck Schumer decried partisan overreach. Screw you, all three of you. Fearing a September 30th shutdown and budget talks collapse because of this. They're going to say they're going to shut the government down. I guarantee you Trump will welcome that. Because he's going to come out how much money they will save. Because right now America does view the federal worker as, man, y'all just taking our money. And then, so Trump is on the right side today, at least. And in history, he will be. Because we don't need a third of these government services that our taxpayers are paying. So now critics say, well, he could leverage the $1.1 billion NPR and PBS, that cut, as a broader fiscal fight, meaning I'll give it back to you if I get this, and this. I hope not. But some of the hate that NPR PBS spewed, in 2017, PBS devoted an entire panel discussing what it means to be woke and white privilege. Pretty much it was a bunch of minority racists out there spewing white supremacist nonsense. In 2018, the current NPR CEO called Trump racist, shared a photo of herself wearing a Biden for President campaign hat, and she serves on the board of a Soros-funded activist group. She's a pure leftist. And NPR refused to cover the Hunter Biden laptop story. Just refused to cover it because they knew it would hurt Biden. A PBS correspondent said Trump's Mount Rushmore speech was a love letter to white hate, white supremacy. 2023 PBS Washington Week Roundtable ignored Joe Biden's clear mental decline. I think they did a survey. It's like it was 87-1 or 87-0 a PBS department in terms of leftists to conservatives. NPR promotes gender-affirming care for minors. They feature drag for kids. They apologize for calling illegal aliens illegal. Label content as flawed, a.k.a. the Declaration of Independence. Their CEO, Catherine Marr, called Trump a racist, supported Soros-funded activism. She aligns with leftist ideology, criticized conservative policies as harmful to minorities. Oh, yeah. Chica, yo soy Latino, and I love conservative policies, as do millions and millions of us and millions and millions and millions of blacks and millions and millions and millions of Asians and millions of Native Americans. She endorsed social justice initiatives like defund the police. She said, my conservative viewpoints are outdated or bigoted. She participates in events promoting anti-racist rhetoric. She advocates for policies that favor leftist agendas over traditional values. She's a sow. So CBS cry, or NPR and PBS cry, they only use 1% of our money. Yet they're acting as if they're going to go out of business. This is going to destroy them. Well, the market forces will determine all this. Right now, they get their money through corporate sponsorships about 40%. Individual donations about 30%, and foundation grants at 20%. A lot of this money is going to go away. Once the government funding dries up It's not going to be a political beast anymore. They're going to, they will slowly fade away, especially with corporate sponsorships. Because what will happen is we conservatives have learned how to boycott, and we'll make sure that we, the people, know who is sponsoring NPR and PBS. Again, they say only 1% from federal CPB funding nationally. But here's the problem. Every chapter or affiliate has to send money to national. So the people they say are going to be hurt, they're the ones taking money from them. Oh, but we know how to best use it. You hear that a lot from government and elites, don't we? So anyway, those affiliates send about 50% of their money to national, who then redistributes it. I know this firsthand. I have worked at a nonprofit that did this, and it was not a fair exchange. The money we got back was never equal to the amount we sent in. Now, some chapters probably got more, but it was like our donors are – we eventually had to implement and ask our donors, do you want this? Because a lot of donors said, I'm not going to donate to you guys because you guys are sending the money to national. I'm donating to you guys. So we created an uproar with national, and we created a truce. All money that was donated to our chapter went to us. They had to specifically say they wanted to go to national or vice versa. Either way, we made sure that they knew that. And we started getting 90% of that money started staying with us. So despite claims of minimal taxpayer impact, millions are allocated support of our money supports 350 PBS stations and 1,000 NPR affiliates. Now, many in rural areas, but here's the key, people. Rural has been replaced through streaming, through satellite, through wireless, through cable. It's reached out here. These wireless towers are everywhere. So there's a big discrepancy in how they want you to believe what's happening. So the 1% national funding also masks the reality that rural stations depend on CPB for survival. It doesn't. If it's only 1%, then it's not going to kill them. But if that's where they get most of the money to the rural, then NPR, you got a decision to make. Do you keep funding the rural? Because you're saying this is for the people. Is it really, though? I don't think it is. I think this is your excuse. These rural stations are going to go out of business because you're not going to fund them. Even though if it's only 1%, you can find that 1% elsewhere. The claims of decimation are overstated. Again, we have alternate media, local stations, internet, emergency services argument. That's so much. Pew shows only 42% rely on public media. And we're not even talking emergencies. Emergencies probably less percentage. We go to our local station. And that's usually your local channel 10, channel 5, channel 7, channel 39, whatever number it is in your area. We have $36 trillion debt. Taxpayer funding should not be going to outlets that no longer need the money. And let's not forget, when PBS first began and NPR, we had limited choices. We had three networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, PBS being the fourth. Once cable came about, they should have stopped the funding then, but they didn't. They did not. Now with the internet, with streaming on top of cable, we don't need it. And we are in debt $36 trillion. So we got to cut from everywhere. Now there's going to be lawsuits. And they're threatening the government shutdown and we don't fund them. So be it. I spoke to a lawyer. We are standing on solid ground with the way it was defunded. And I think it's going to be a slam dunk win. And if they want to do a shutdown, well, they're only hurting themselves. Shut it down. Shut it down. All right. So this is good news. This is good news. I mean, Congress defunding NPR to PBS is slashing the foreign aid, USAID, Trump's recession bill. It's a conservative triumph. Over who? Over biased media and globalist waste. Look, this is one of the few times the GOP is unified outside of a few outliers. And Doge helped push this. Elon helped push this. What critics miss and what we conservatives demand is reallocating taxpayer dollars to American needs, not woke propaganda or foreign handouts. And I didn't talk about the foreign handouts, but the USAID billions were cut. Never forget the cost of liberal bias. So this victory should fuel a new era of accountability, theoretically. This, along with prioritizing our borders and our future, is tantamount. There you have it, my friends, the three major articles. So let's get to the rude rundown, where I quickly go over topics here of note. Superman's budget and break-even point. So Superman, James Gunn's Superman, came out last week. I didn't talk about it, but I wanted to touch on it this week. The total box office for the opening weekend was about $220 million globally, with about $125 million domestically and $95 million internationally. It was strong domestically, and it was weak internationally. So the production budget, that's what's important here. That sparked some serious debate. Initial reports said $364 million, which makes it one of the most expensive films ever. But official statements, they say after tax cuts and this and that, we're looking at $225 million. It's probably somewhere in a million, in the middle of $300 million. Never believe the low count. They always talk about the low count. So marketing, they're saying about $200 million. The studio say, no, it's only $100 million. Look, so anecdotally speaking and having analyzed and broken this down for a couple years, the box office and how it works, this movie saw more marketing than your typical big tent movie. So I'm willing to sit there and say it was above $100 million. I'm probably, again, break it down the middle, about $150 million. So you combine the net production budget with a higher marketing figure, and you're talking about a total outlay of about $425 million. That's the high end, the cost, the high end cost here, total high end cost. So it's going to need about $1 billion to break even. And there's a formula that in Hollywood that's called the box office multiplier. The standard number is 3, but over the last year and a half, because of all the debacles, the flops, I've noticed people using the 2.5 times multiplier. So whatever the movie costs, 2.5 times more to break even. Look, it made for, it made $220 million worldwide last week. Warner Brothers does not get $220 million. They have to share that money, you know? So that's why the multiplier effect. With the lower marketing number, it's going to need about $800 million to break even. It's still doing well. Week two, about $56, $57 million domestically. They're looking at $400 million. But it's... that's over a 55% drop, and that exponentially continues. So next week, maybe 20 million. You see how it begins to drop each week? Then the following week, 12 million, the 4 million. So within a few weeks, you're going to be in single-digit million dollars. But regardless, that's a healthier hold than most recent superhero films, including Thunderbolts and Captain America's Brave New World. So it may break even. But Warner Brothers and James Gunn, the creator, not the creator, but the guy who's putting the new DC universe together, they weren't looking for a break even. They were looking for a massive hit. Superman has on his shoulders the DC universe and the relaunch. And this movie did not make it from that perspective and break even. It's going to be interesting on the, if it falls off a cliff after this week. Because we are still in the holiday week. We're still in a strong conservative mode of celebrating our American values with July 4th. It's going to be interesting how it goes next week and moving forward. I think it's going to drop like a rock. I don't think the movie's going to break even. And they rushed out a little bit too quickly praising the movie, how big a hit it was. It's kind of like they know it's not where they want it to be, but they got to put the show on. And because they were close to it being a hit, they think they can get away with it. But the numbers will tell the story. All right, Resident Evil. Their new movie director anticipates online backlash. So director Zach Cregger, he's known for Barbarian, he expects online hate for the upcoming Resident Evil movie. That's going to be released next year in September 18th, 2026. But the reason he expects backlash is because he's not going to adhere to the game's lore. He aims to create what he calls an authentic experience instead of a faithful one. And he says fan criticism is inevitable regardless of his approach. Now, if he sticks to the lore and everything about it, it's like creating just a new Resident Evil adventure. That's fine. but they completely change aspects of Mila Jovovich, her set of movies. Now, those movies were low, not low budget, but very limited budget. So they made money, but they weren't the blockbuster hit. They always underperformed, but they did good enough to warrant sequel after sequel after sequel. And I enjoyed it, but it wasn't Resident Evil. They canceled the Netflix Resident Evil because I heard it was so bad. I was going to watch it until I heard how bad it was. They canceled it after one season. And I enjoyed Lance Reddick. Rest in peace. But it wasn't. So if he sticks to the lore, he'll do well. Meaning he doesn't have to stick to any of the stories that we've seen in the games. But if he sticks to the characters, if he sticks to their origin stories, how the world is created, but just has a different story, that's one thing. But if he changes it, it's just not going to be, it's not going to do well. Now, the problem with the last one, it was too, there was no suspense, no terror. It wasn't scary, so that one didn't do well. So they just keep trying with this one. I've never seen a movie bomb so much and still get revitalized than Resident Evil. All right. Taika Waititi is going to direct the next Judge Dredd movie. So Taika Waititi, he's known for Thor, Ragnarok, and Jojo Rabbit, never saw it. He's supposed to be, he's set to direct the new Judge Dredd movie. And Drew Pearce, the great Drew Pearce, I don't know who the hell he is, he's going to be writing the script. So he's talking about bringing back the iconic British comic book character from the original comics, meaning he's going to draw from the comic book. The last Judge Dredd movie was phenomenal. But it underperformed because it had a massive budget because they did it in 3D. So it was uberly expensive, but it's become a cult hit. Not the 3D version, just the movie itself. It's kind of becoming like a Roadhouse. These cult following movies. And every year, somebody talks about doing another one. Looks like they finally gave the go. Is it Warhammer? No. God, I'm trying to play War. The Green Ogres. I can't remember. But that one's become a cult hit, too. What's it called? That's pissing me off because I can't remember the name of it. And I should. I've actually podcasted about it. But the point is these cult hits, it's good to see this one coming. Now, I'm going to be frank here. I want to see Carl Urban play the role again. Carl Urban did a great job on Judge Dredd. He kept the helmet on the whole time. There's certain characters, whether comic books or gaming, we don't care about the person underneath the mask. It's the person with the mask. And Judge Dredd was an adventure story. It was built around the storyline, not the characters. We got to know the characters over the years, decades with Judge Dredd, but there's not a lot of depth. There's enough depth to make us like them or dislike them, but not enough depth where we know about their family life or this or that, because we don't care. It's about Judge Dredd. It's about killing bad guys. And Carl Urban did that majestically. In Halo, Pablo, whatever his name was, who played it, he was whining, as an actor, you don't get the depth and you don't see the depth of the character with the helmet on. And Stallone had to take the helmet off. We don't care. You guys are acting. Master Chief, we don't care about Master Chief without the helmet. We care about Master Chief on with the helmet. With Judge Dredd, we cared about Judge Dredd with the helmet. That's it. And I hope he follows that lore. All right, Akira Toriyama's death. This happened back in March. We are in July, but I just got to give my props to Dragon Ball Z and the legacy Toriyama left. He's the creator of Dragon Ball. He passed away in March, and that was because of acute subdural hematoma, blood clot in the brain from an injury. We don't know what the injury was. He was only 68, so obviously that was a big loss to anime, and I just want to give my props to the guy. Why? The guy built a universe that's generated over 20 billion. 20 billion. This show changed animation styles. It introduced transformation sequences. It became a cultural phenomena. 25 years ago, I watched it. Vegeta 4. He was a Saiyan prince. He was my favorite character. And to this day, when I think of Dragon Ball Z, I think of Vegeta. So I just want to give rest in peace, God bless, Godspeed to your new travel. All right, let's close it out with Duck Dynasty, the revival. A couple weeks ago, I did a long podcast on Duck Dynasty Revival and why it was not clicking with fans. In a nutshell, we don't care about the kids. Great kids. God bless them. God-fearing, good Christian kids. I cared more about Jace, Willie, Sid, Martin, Godwin, obviously Phil, and Miss K. Those were the ones, and Jeff. Those are the characters I cared about. That's it. Everybody else was supporting cast. And I love them to death. The kids, I didn't care about the kids. Not because I didn't care about them. I wasn't watching the show for them. Well, Willie and Corey kind of brought it back, and God bless them. It's a nice little show. But there's no connection. I watch it because I'm a Duck Dynasty fan, and I want to support the show. But it's kind of boring, kind of bland, kind of too scripted. And there is no godliness that Phil brought. Because the godliness that Phil brought is gone. Jace said that. So Willie's a God-fearing person. But the soul has been transferred to Jace, and he's not part of the show. I'm not saying this. I did the whole show. Check it out on grumblingsmedia.com, as well as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, Pandora. I forget which episode, but it's Duck Dynasty. It's a couple episodes ago. And I talk about why. But the point being is, I'm not alone. And I told them how they could fix it. And I'm seeing aspects of that fix being implemented. I guarantee you, after the first couple of weeks, they scrambled to do recuts, do new edits. They probably reshot some shows or some scenes. Why? Because they renewed it for season two. I guarantee you, you're going to see Jep. Because Jep is now back in West Monroe, as is Jace. So they can bring the old crew back and make it work. If they're willing, I don't know if they are. And I don't know if Willie and Corey had the ego to go, okay, we'll change it. But it started out week one, 510,000. The show ended its original run at a couple million, between 1 to 2 million an episode. At its high peak, it was nearly 12 million. So 510,000 for an opening show? No, that's terrible. And the decline reflects the challenges of reviving the series. And it's a different landscape now. But the weeks since haven't been kind. Week one to week two saw a 67% drop. Week two to week three, another drop, 66% drop from week one. From week three to week four, a 13% drop. They did have an uptick last episode. Literally a 99% uptick from week six. But still a 46% drop from week one. Can you believe that? Man, I tell you. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And that's the problem right now with that show. The show's back up, but it's not following. I think it was it went from 500 to like 200,000. It's a massive drop. Massive, massive drop. Anyway, I'll keep you posted on that. And that's our show for the day. I want to thank you for watching. I'm disappointed because I thought I had the actual ratings numbers in here. And I did not put them in. I mean, I have it, but I didn't put them in. So I apologize about that. But regardless, 60% drop from week one to week six. Not good. But that's our show. Thank you for watching. It was a great week if you believe in American values and you're conservative. Great week because NPR PBS got defunded and Stephen Colbert's late show got canceled. And let's be honest, when's the last time a progressive or Democrat talked about loving America? I can't remember. I mean, that's why we podcast. That's why you listen. And that's why we're in this fight together. So before I go, do not forget, bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, under the handle Grumblings Media. Stay rude and challenge those who would live, or rather who would badmouth the red, white, and blue. Until next time, I am William Del Pilar for the Red, White, and Rude, and I bid you adieu.